News of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Nearly 80 of the countries represented over the weekend at the Summit on Peace of Ukraine agreed territorial integrity and the principles of international law and the UN Charter should be the basis for talks to end the Russian war in Ukraine.
Leaders from 101 countries and organizations wrapped up 2 days of discussion on ending Russia's war in Ukraine with a show of unity against Russian aggression. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called for a diplomatic solution to end the war.
War is not our choice. It's Putin's choice.
Russia was not invited, but just before the summit, President Vladimir Putin demanded that Ukraine withdraw from territory captured by Russia and abandon its goal of joining NATO. U.S. and other representatives at the summit saw this as an ultimatum, saying Russia has no intention of fostering peace or real negotiations.
Miroslava Gungadze, VOA News, Bergenstock Resort, Switzerland.
A U.S. special envoy visited Jerusalem Monday seeking to calm the situation on the disputed northern border with Lebanon and Israel. Reuters correspondent Alex Cohen.
Israel said tensions with the Iran-backed Hezbollah militia could lead to a larger conflict. Here's Israeli Army spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari.
Hezbollah is jeopardizing the future of Lebanon so that it can be a shield for Hamas.
U.S. Special Envoy Amos Hochstein's visit follows weeks of increasing exchanges of fire along the line between Israel and Lebanon, where Israeli forces have for months been engaged in a simmering conflict with Hezbollah that has continued alongside the war in Gaza.
South Korea's military says soldiers fired warning shots to repel North Korean soldiers who had temporarily crossed the rival's land border for the second time this month. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said around 20 to 30 North Korean soldiers engaged in unspecified construction work. This is VOA News. Russian President Vladimir Putin is thanking North Korea for supporting his actions in Ukraine and says the two countries would work together to overcome U.S.-led sanctions. Comments were published Tuesday as the Russian leader was heading to Pyongyang to meet with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Their countries are deepening their alignment in the face of intensifying confrontations with Washington. Putin's comments appeared on North Korean state media hours before Putin expected arrival and international concerns about the two countries expanding military cooperation. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Monday that nearly two dozen NATO members will meet the alliance's target spending to defense this year, highlighting how allies have raised military spending since Russia seized Crimea from Ukraine in 2014.
This year, 23 allies will spend 2% of GDP or more on defense, which is twice as much as just 4 years ago.
Stoltenberg in Washington said the trend is increased military spending by NATO members was triggered by Russia's seizure of Crimea. NATO's defense spending has become highly contentious in recent years, particularly as former U.S. President Donald Trump accused Europeans of spending too little on their own security and relying on the United States for protection. An Indian man accused by U.S. prosecutors of orchestrating an unsuccessful plot to kill a Sikh separatist on American soil pleaded not guilty Monday to murder for hire conspiracy charges in a federal court in New York. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman.
Niku Gupta also was ordered detained during the hearing. U.S. federal prosecutors allege Gupta plotted with an Indian government official to kill Gurpatwant Singh Panun, a U.S. resident who advocated for a sovereign Sikh state in northern India. Last June, Gupta traveled to Prague from India and was arrested by Czech authorities. Video released on Monday by the Czech police appears to show two New York police officers escorting a handcuffed suspect at the airport in Prague. Czech Justice Minister Pavel Blažek said Gupta was extradited to the U.S. on Friday. The discovery of alleged assassination plots against Sikh separatists in the U.S. and Canada has tested relations with India. India's government denies involvement in such plots.
Reuters' Zachary Goldman. More than 75 million people in the United States are under extreme heat alert as a heat wave moves eastward. The Mid-Atlantic and New England are likely to see highs in the 90s as the week progresses. Excessive humidity will make it even more oppressive. The U.S. last year saw the most heat waves consisting of abnormally hot weather lasting more than 2 days since 1936. Officials again are warning residents to take precautions. Much of the Midwest and Northeast are under heat warnings or watches, while much of U.S. swelters, late season snow was forecast for the Northern Rockies. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 18th. And here are some of the stories we are following. Protests are planned for today, calling Kenyan parliamentarians not to approve the 2024 finance bill.
Most Kenyans, I dare say all Kenyans, do not want the finance bill because the finance bill is very punitive. It's going to increase the cost of living. It's going to leave a lot of Kenyans really struggling so much more than they are right now.
A Zimbabwe opposition leader and some of his supporters are expected to appear in court today, Tuesday, for allegedly holding an unlawful meeting. Sudanese refugees learn English to adapt to their new home in Uganda. Sierra Leone's main opposition APC withdraws from the country's tripartite committee, which is reviewing the electoral system.
We thought that without that result, it means we're just wasting our time. That is why we have suspended our participation. We have not quit, but we have suspended our participation until that result is provided.
And a local organization gives hope to hundreds of illiterate Liberian women. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Organizers are calling on Kenyans to pressure parliamentarians not to approve the 2024 finance bill at a planned protest near the legislature on Tuesday. Called Occupy Parliament, organizers say most citizens fear the measure will worsen the already expensive cost of living. Parliament is expected to begin debate on the finance bill today, Tuesday. Jerry Mwangi is one of the organizers of the protest. She tells viewers Peter Clotte that a finance bill must be rejected for a review to ensure it serves the interests of the public.
We're just going to sit around Parliament where we expect that the members of Parliament are going to be voting either yes or no for the finance bill 2024-2025. And most Kenyans, I dare say all Kenyans, do not want the finance bill, because the finance bill is very punitive. It's going to increase the cost of living. It's going to leave a lot of Kenyans really struggling so much more than they are right now. It's going to make business very difficult to do. Just everything is going up high. And the problem is that even with these high taxes, we are not seeing where this money is going. We are paying debts, and we are not seeing any improvement in the lives of Kenyans or even towards the lives of Kenyans. So we are saying a big no to the finance bill as Kenyans.
But some people are suggesting that the taxation is necessary for government to provide infrastructure and service debt that has been accrued over the years. So going against it undermines government's effort to provide the needs of Kenyans, basically. How do you respond to that?
It is true. If we were taxed and the money was going to where it was supposed to be going, then Kenyans would not mind paying the tax. But the problem is we have seen a lot of corruption. And we're seeing a lot of money just being used in ways that it shouldn't be. Doctors are not being paid. Education is in shambles because even our teachers are going on strike. Our roads are a mess. We're not seeing where this money is going. If we could be able to see where this money is actually going and we could see an improvement in the lives of Kenyans, then yes, they can tax. But for as long as we don't see where this money is going, rather when where we see the money is going is to line their pockets and to live a lavish life, then no.
And Jerry, realistically, do you think this Occupy Parliament will put pressure on these lawmakers not to approve this measure?
Well, I think it does put pressure. Some of them have been seeing there's a lot of pressure from their constituents to reject the finance bill. But most of them, again, will say that they can't vote no for it because they have to please their master. So they're not voting for the people. Even they may not want it, but we do not know what they have been threatened with. We do not know what they have been told will happen because they're afraid of voting no. So our presence in Parliament is to support them to say no, but also to hold them accountable, to say that you're not there for yourselves, you're there for us. We voted for you. Kenyans voted for you. And even if they didn't, you are there to serve the Kenyan people. So the will of the Kenyan people is supreme and their will is a no.
But what is the alternative? Because some are suggesting that the alternative could be worse for the people of Kenya because you can't eat your cake and have it, they argue.
No, we're not trying to eat our cake. They're trying to eat their cake and have it. The alternative is that that finance bill, they need to review, they need to cut costs. A great deal, they need to cut costs on their expenditures. And then we can look at that bill realistically.
Jerry Mwangi is one of the organizers of the Occupy Parliament protest. She spoke with viewers Peter Clotty. In Zimbabwe, the leader of a breakaway faction of the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, also known as Triple C, and some of his supporters are expected to appear in court today, Tuesday, for allegedly holding an unlawful meeting and for disorderly conduct. According to the New Zimbabwe, Jameson Timba and 78 others were arrested over the weekend. Tandai Ruby Mbufana is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He tells me that by law, the police do not need to be notified about private gatherings, only public ones.
They were gathering for the 16th of June, Day of the African Child, which is an internationally recognized day. The one in Harare, they were gathered at Jameson Timber's house, and the one in Chinoy, they were gathered at the Triple C offices. So we are receiving reports for the one in Harare that there were quite a number of injuries. Some are saying that they have sustained broken bones, arms and legs because of the violence that they faced at the hands of the police. Those are the allegations we are receiving at the moment.
Now they are supposed to appear in court on Tuesday. What is the violation?
That's the thing, James. What are they being charged with? From what I've read, they're saying that disorderly or disorderly conduct or something flimsy like that. But in Zimbabwe, only public gatherings are supposed to be sanctioned by the police. But what we see from these two gatherings in Harare and in Chinoy, one was held at a Triple C office, and the other one was held at a private residence. So none of them were public gatherings. You do not need police authorization or permission to hold those events. It's just like with your own home and you want to invite some friends for a birthday party or a funeral or whatever it is. You don't need permission from the police. So it's a big mystery to say, why were the police there? Why did they come there? And why did they disrupt these gatherings? Because there is no report that the people were being disorderly. There are no reports that the people were being violent. They were just having their meetings, and the police pitched up, and they allegedly brutalized people. And, of course, we know that in Harare, quite a number were arrested.
Of course, the police, violated Section 37 of the Criminal Law Codification and the Reform Act because they gather unlawfully.
Yes, that's the thing, because there is nothing like that. It's only when there is a public gathering. That's where the law stipulates clearly that you need police permission to gather in a public place, in a stadium, wherever, you know. But this was a private residence. You do not need police clearance for that.
Tandai Ruby Mbufana is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Zimbabwe police did not respond to our request for a comment. One of the chief obstacles for Sudanese refugees trying to build new lives in Uganda is the language barrier. Some of the estimated 40,000 people who arrived in recent months had limited English skills and not enough to hold jobs or move easily through Ugandan society. A women's empowering group in central Uganda is trying to change that. Halima Atumani and Munkasa Francis report from Munkono District.
The man killed a mighty giant.
A basic English lesson being taken by former professional civil servants and their children. These are Arab-speaking refugees from Sudan who are in desperate need of learning the English language to ease their transition into Uganda. Among them is Razan Abdurrahim Muhammad, a chemical engineer by profession and the mother of four children. Having escaped from Sudan in March, Muhammad lost contact with her husband.
I want improve myself to be able to apply for any job so that I want to care my children.
Each of the 50 students in the class needs at least 3 months to learn the language. Asmahan Ahmed must mix Arabic and English for easy understanding for her students. With few teaching facilities, the former civil engineer is teaching a lesson about basic English sounds. Most of the refugees, she says, learned only a little English in school before arriving in Uganda.
It was difficult for us to communicate and use it for social purposes, and we find that hardness to explain ourselves that what we know, then what we want, what we need.
Dawla Hussein Hassan was first displaced from Sudan in 2011 during a civil conflict. She sought refuge in South Sudan, but that country's conflict drove her to Uganda in 2014. Now, the executive director of the Kanda Kiat Organization for Women's Empowerment says she has been working to better the lives of these newly arrived Sudanese refugees. Hassan notes that struggles with the English language have left many refugees frustrated regardless of their education and qualifications.
They need real assist to fix themselves within this community and to feel their dignity, because if I'm a doctor myself, I'm not expressing to my fellow doctor how I feel, how I'm sick, because of the language barrier. The shame comes up. You find you're humiliated.
As of early June, Uganda has registered more than 39,000 refugees from Sudan, with 70% being women and children. Paul Zbigniewdime, the senior protection officer with the UN Refugee Agency in Uganda, is working with the Ugandan government to get refugee doctors and professors licensed and certified.
We have been able to profile most of the workers so far at Kiryandongo level, in Kampala level, and we are having those discussions and the work with Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education and Sport to have them being able to exercise an activity here in Uganda.
Hassan hopes that with more support and the expansion of the teaching facility, more refugees will acquire better English language skills to prepare them for what now seems like an uncertain future.
Sharpman.
Halima Athmani for VA News, Mukono, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, June 18th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If all goes as planned, Sierra Leone's tripartite committee established to review the country's electoral systems following the controversial June 2023 presidential polls is supposed to submit its report tomorrow, Wednesday. It is made up of 7 members from the main opposition All People's Congress APC party, 7 from the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, and 1 member representing the international community. Now, the opposition APC has suspended its participation. Lansana Dumbuya is the National Secretary General of the APC. He tells me that the government representatives on the committee refused to make available the June 2023 election results.
James, if you recall that we had a difficult elections, and the international elections observers and also new, which is also a local but credible election observation team, even our own internal observation and monitoring team as a party, all of us agreed that the elections had difficulties and the tabulations process did not represent the results. We said we're not going to participate in governance. But, you know, the APC love the country, we love the people of this country, and notwithstanding difficult circumstances, we decided that we would sit and talk, engage in dialogue. So that is exactly what we did. And it resulted to the Bintumani Unity Agreement. In that agreement, it provided for the creation of a tripartite committee to examine the 2023 elections.
Mr. Dumbuya, you did that discussion within the tripartite committee. And my understanding is that the tripartite committee recently submitted its report. Is that correct?
That's not true. They are still doing their work. And in the process of doing their work, our team in the tripartite committee requested that we want the disaggregated results. When the first announcement was made for the presidential election, it was only 60% that was announced. So our members in the team told the committee, we want ECSL to verify this result because it's under their signatures and everything, so that it can form part of the process, the examining process of the tripartite committee. The other people and the government representative said, no, They cannot request for that document. So when you look at it, James, you will really see that there's something amiss there. Why wouldn't you want to request for a document that was initiated by the commission itself? And it was this result that brought about all this thing that we're talking about now, this tripartite, the contesting of the results, and all the rest of it. So why wouldn't you want that document to be provided to the tripartite committee? So we requested for it in the dialogue. The government representative said, okay, well, we are not going to ask for it, but you can ask. You write a letter, your team write a letter to ECSL and ask for it. So our team said, okay, if we cannot do it jointly, which we're supposed to do, you're supposed to cooperate. That's how they've been doing it. But we don't know why you do not want to do it this time. But then our team, the APC team, went ahead and requested the documents. We received a reply from ECSL that they are not going to provide it because our team did not follow administrative procedure. But for goodness sake, if that document, whoever is asking for it, if the document is germane to the committee, but that is where we are now. And as a result, our team reported to the party, and we thought that without that result, it means we're just wasting our time. So that is why we have suspended our participation. We have not quit, but we have suspended our participation until that result is provided.
Lassana Dumbuya is the National Secretary General of Sierra Leone's main opposition, All People's Congress. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio is calling on members of the Tripartite Committee to stay focused and complete their work. The committee was established to review the country's electoral systems following the controversial June 2023 presidential polls and is supposed to submit its report Wednesday. The appeal comes after the main opposition All People's Congress, APC, announced that it is withdrawing from the committee. Information Minister Chana Ba tells me President Maada Bio warned against troublemakers.
The president spoke to the nation to reaffirm his commitments to peace and national cohesion, to update the public on the steps that our government continue to take to advance the agreements that were made, and as the father of the nation and the father of peace, to implore the country to resist every attempt by any detractors to pursue violence or to divide our country.
Minister, the president's speech came against the backdrop of the opposition APC saying that it has withdrawn from the tripartite committee. Was the president responding to that? And what do you make of the allegations they made that your government did not provide the information they wanted for verification of the results of the June 2023 election?
Well, I mean, two things are clear here. First is that the tripartite committee had a very clear mandate. The president reiterated what that mandate was. He called for the setting up, in fact, of an electoral reform systems review committee when he spoke to parliament after he won the election. And when the committee came together, they had very clear terms of reference, which was to review the systems, practices, and processes so that we can make our elections better going forward, especially for our election management bodies. What has happened is that the committee has embarked on that work since the first week of January. Our understanding is that they have done a comprehensive set of recommendations, reviews that have taken place, and it seems that the All People's Congress, by their own release, are mentioning that because they ask for a very specific thing in an exchange, not from the committee as a whole, but only from them to the Electoral Commission, that they have decided to withdraw. Obviously, this is something that is unwelcome. We will wish, as the president has said, that they will continue this important work to advance the reforms that we all seek, that we all agree we need to make our democracy and our country better. We believe that the work is important. We believe that the good men and women of the opposition party will see the reason and come back to the table. And, you know, it's important as well, James, that this is a tripartite committee. So that means we have government side, we have the All People's Congress, the opposition side. We also have our international partners, and they have put a lot of resources into this process. They are aware of the inner workings. They have hired consultants and experts that have worked with this committee. And all the other two parties, I don't think, are willing to walk away. So we still expect that the committee will finalize its work. They have put a lot of excellent work, we hear, into this. And we're eager, the president made clear today, that he's particularly eager to receive his recommendations and to start the process of implementing them to improve in our demography.
John Abar is Sierra Leone's Information Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. France is planning to reduce its military presence in Western Central Africa to around 600 troops, in line with President Emmanuel Macron's plans to limit the French military footprint in the region, three sources told the French news agency, the AFP. In February 2023, Macron announced a noticeable reduction of French troop presence in Africa. This, as anti-French sentiments is running high in some former colonies, and countries like Russia are vying for greater influence. Democratic Republic of Congo's Electoral Commission on Monday slammed a report by the influential Catholic and Protestant churches criticizing elections in December, which led to the re-election of President Felix Tshisekedi. Hundreds of illiterate Liberian women are receiving training from a local organization, the Women Development Initiative Foundation. As Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia, many of those women have already begun to read and write.
Many Liberian women and girls are not educated due to the impact of decades of civil war coupled with poverty and teenage pregnancy. Now they have been given an opportunity to not only learn how to read and write, but also learn certain skills. Prince Dennis is the executive director of the Women Development Initiative Foundation. He says the foundation was established in 2016 to make people independent and not rely on government for a living.
We cannot depend and put everything on government or focus on government. We want for people to be able to do things all by themselves. So these are why we offer literacy, so their mind can be moved on government. Because if your mind is on government, you won't focus to do something all by yourself.
48-year-old Evelyn Colley told VOA that she is happy to learn to read and write, and that her next step is to learn a skill.
I heard about this school. So I said, oh, let me come go learn something here. So I can arrest me say Molin APC. Yes, I can learn the APC. I know the APC now. So they say they will be advancing all the train. So I said, yes, I will learn about speaking bread. To know everything.
Comfort Deba, a 38-year-old beneficiary, is now optimistic about the future.
She's so happy because this was my dream, to get something in my brain that tomorrow I will live by it. And I've been wishing to attend train, but there is no money. But bless God that I have come in my community, so I'm so happy to take the advantage of it.
23-year-old Finda Sarr, who is learning to become an interior decorator, appeals for more support for the program.
I'm learning interior decoration. I just want to tell God, thank you that the people are very teachable. And we're just starting, and we need help from you. At least you can help us. So it's not easy. Ready to see young people now sitting down and doing nothing. At least we just want to tell the other people, thank you.
The foundation's executive director, Prince Dennis, says he started the organization with his personal money and said he's not wealthy, but sometimes well-meaning Liberians do offer support, and that he is considering asking for domestic or international support because he says is difficult to sustain, especially with 13 centers across the country and more than 5,000 beneficiaries.
Now we have 5,000 plus covering, because we have a center in Abuja Quarter, we have a center in Tori District, we are in Yemen, we have a center in Kwazi. We have 13 centers now across the country, and all these centers are running by us. They are all depending on support.
The women are hopeful that the program will help improve their lives. For VOA, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
And that's it for this Tuesday, June 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butty, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.